All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. First item of business is our roll call. However, for remote meetings, I do need to read a script, so please bear with me. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and a recording will be posted on the authority's website. Next would be our roll call of board members, and I'll start with myself, Peter Lisi, obviously present. Benita Brown Eyes.
Bettina, yes, here.
Thank you. Marty Budd.
Present.
Thank you. Andrew Foster. Is Andrew with us? No. Michael Azzotti. Michael? No. Carrie Kelly.
Present.
Thank you. Julie Savino.
Present.
Laura Baker.
Present.
Thank you. And Jeanette Weldon.
Present.
Thank you. Did I miss anyone? All right. Individuals are asked to state their name and title before speaking during the meeting, and votes will be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or an email advising whether, number one, the meeting is postponed or the time that it will be resumed. So with that as a preamble, we can get right to the agenda. And meeting's been called to order. We've done the roll call. First item of business are the minutes from our March 23rd meeting. And I'm hoping that people spend a little time with those minutes and reviewed them. And I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes, and then we can get into corrections and clarifications if there need be. So is there a motion to accept the minutes for March 23rd?
Julie Savino, so moved.
Julie moved it. Marty seconded it. Okay, the motion's been made and seconded to accept the minutes for March 23rd. Are there any corrections or edits?
I had a question. Jeanette, we have a thing saying here that you're going to consider a private placement. Are you going to report on that on our next meeting? Or
that was just as we further strategize about how we might fund refi going forward. I believe that's what that
right. I think that was the context.
Yeah, so it's just, I mean, I could make it more generic if that would
right.
be
helpful. But when will we hear about that?
In the coming months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those loans are now out on their own, just in our balance sheet. Or
well, if you recall, at the last board meeting, we did vote for some dollars to come out of CSLF to be available for refi. So
right.
There's $750,000 coming out of the operating account of CSLF that could potentially be available for refi, as well as, I think, an additional $2,250,000 coming out of the trust that could be available for refi.
And those are the ones you're thinking about putting in a private placement.
Yes, we went through that structure. It was it was put forth as an option to be looked at. Yeah.
For the record, this is Tim Webb with Hilltop. Mr. Budd, that is one of the options that we're looking at as a potential future long-term financing vehicle, or at least an interim term financing vehicle. Right now you have difficulty financing refi loans on a tax exempt basis. So we'd have to do those on a taxable basis, and you need to get to a certain threshold as far as the size is concerned to make it economically feasible to issue taxable bonds. So in an effort to look at what we might do in the future, we're considering all options, one of which may be a private placement, but nothing has been decided or pushed forward. It's just something on the table that we will consider as we move forward.
Can we also contribute them to the resolution as additional assets?
I believe that's the case. Bond counsel may want to chime in there, but yes, I believe that they can be provided as equity into a transaction subject to bond counsel's approval.
And we had four legislative items. Has anything happened on those four legislative items, kind of loan assistance in certain industries?
Marty, before we get to that, let's clean up the one item from the minute. So Marty, you raised the issue. Does the issue of the private placement need some clarification in the minutes?
I don't know. I think it's good enough as is.
Okay.
With all
right,
that.
Fine.
Well, and then there is on page 11, legislative update.
Right.
Four things.
Okay. Did you have a question on those, Marty?
Yeah, if anything happened that we should know about.
Thank you, Marty. At this point, no additional action has been taken on any of those items. They're still awaiting action from the legislature in their respective chambers.
Good, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, it's been made and seconded to accept them as presented. With no further questions, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions?
I'd like to abstain.
And who? Oh, Carrie?
Okay. I'm sorry, Carrie Kelly.
Yep, one abstention. Okay, thank you very much. Motion carries with one abstention. Okay, next item of business and our primary reason for gathering today, I believe, is a discussion and hopefully a board vote on the authorizing resolution for our 2023 series bonds. Jeanette, would you like to introduce it? And then I think we're going to have some input from Tim and some folks from Bank of America. But I'll turn it over to you, Jeanette.
Yes, so your board package included the draft of the POS and the documents to go along with our planned spring financing. And Tim Webb is, you know, we've had our working group together developing the cash flows, going through all of the parameters as a group. And Tim is going to provide an overview of the transaction and the cash flows. You're on mute, Tim.
And I see that Andrew Foster just joined, so the minutes can reflect that.
Sorry about that. For the record, this is Tim Webb, Hilltop. It's that time of year where we look to issue bonds to help further CHESLA's mission of providing in-school loans and refi loans for the folks in Connecticut. So what we have here, I'm looking at some notes, so I don't see the screen, but I presume we're on page 187 of the board packet, which would be the sources and uses of the particular transaction that we're contemplating. So the way we always start these transactions is we work with the authority to come up with an idea of what amount of funds will be necessary to provide loans for the upcoming academic year. This year will be the 23-24 academic year. We work with Josh and Jeanette to come up with an origination schedule. And then based upon the amount of funds that are necessary, we structure a bond issue that takes into account some other items, including the amount of money that would be necessary to deposit to the SCARF. As you know, these bonds are rated by the SCARF, so we have to maintain MADS, maximum annual debt service, in that account in order to get the appropriate rating. This year, Josh is projecting that the authority will originate somewhere in the area of $23 million worth of in-school CHESLA loans. As you see in the sources and uses page, and on the uses side, down below in the acquisition fund, you'll see a number that says $25 million. The $25 million obviously is $2 million greater than what Josh anticipates originating for a 23-24 academic year. And that is because the authority has already originated $2 million worth of loans with monies from the balance sheet sitting in on Chesla's balance sheet. Last November, an inducement resolution was passed by the authority to allow for the authority to originate those loans and then to effectively sell those loans into the 23 transaction once we close. So the $23 million for new originations and then $2 million additional that would be used to reimburse the authority for loans that have already been made. One clarification with regard to the $2 million is that those loans went out the door at last year's loan rate at a 5.49. It's anticipated based on the market conditions we have right now that the new loans would be at a 6.75. Obviously, that will be dependent upon how successful we are in executing the 23 transaction. But right now, based on the market conditions that these cash flows were run under, we have a 6.75 loan rate. Up above in the source, on the sources side.
Excuse me for a second. What's the current loan rate, Jeanette?
It's 5.49% fixed.
And we don't know what the government's rate is until June. Is that correct?
That will be coming out, Marty, on May 10th. The 10-year T-bill will be auctioned. And on May 10th, we'll know what that T-bill auction rate is. And then you add the 4.6% to that to get the plus rate. So right now, we're looking at something that's close to about an 8% on the plus rate. Someone, maybe B of A or RBC, may have the 10-year T-note up right now, but they might be able to give us a quick indication of where the plus rate might reset if it were today.
Yeah. This is Joe Santora from Bank of America. And yes, Tim, you're about right. At least as of this morning, I don't have like right this second, but this morning it was 3.43. So add 460 to that, and you're just over the 8%. Of course, you know, as a reminder, that's just the raw rate and doesn't, you know, the federal government doesn't disclose the APR, and there's a origination fee on those loans. So effectively, it could be closer to 9% APR.
So our 675 is going to look good.
We hope that to be the case. That's one of the things that we constantly look at, Marty, is to make sure that the rate that Chesla is able to offer as a function of being able to issue bonds on a tax-exempt basis is below what the plus rate is out there. It's often deceptive for borrowers because the plus rate, you don't know what the APR is. And as Joe mentioned, there's quite a hefty origination fee associated with plus loan. And as you know, there's no origination fee here with the Chesla loans. The other thing that I'd point out relative to these cash flows is we're presuming that we're running a 25 basis point ACH for automatic payment or direct debit to accounts on these loans, and that it would be 75% of the portfolio would be subject to that ACH. So, you know, conceivably, people will be borrowing at a 650 as opposed to a 675 with the ACH. So on top of sources and uses, you'll see the bonds. As in the past, we run a series of serial bonds that are locked out or they're non-callable. And then we have a term bond. The term bond we refer to as a super sinker bond. It absorbs all the prepayments that come in off of the loans. It's the most efficient way that we've come up with to date that allows us to get the best cost of funds for the authority. Roughly $15.5 million of serial bonds that are non-callable and $10.4 million of super sinkers. The non-callable bonds will be sold at a premium as indicated by the fact that you sell $15.5 million worth of bonds and you receive proceeds of around $16.4 million. And then term bond, the sinker, super sinker bond is sold at a slight discount. Underneath that, you'll see there's an issuer contribution projected at $1.3 million. Those funds, I believe, are coming from a combination of Chesla and from funds that were moved over from CSLF. I don't know if Jeanette would like to make comment relative to the issuer contribution.
Sure. So if you recall at last month's meeting, CSLF passed a resolution to remove or release $3 million from the trust and have it go to CHESLA. And so $750,000, this was also mentioned in that resolution, $750,000 of that $3 million is being made available to be part of this issuer contribution of 1.3, and the balance will come from CHESLA's unrestricted dollars on its operating account balance sheet. And right now, Carly, if you can comment on what the exact dollar amount as of the latest balance sheet, it's something over $2 million that we have unrestricted in the operating account right now for CHESLA.
Correct. This is Carly Levin. I actually looked today and we have $2.5 million in that account. So that's so, as of today.
Right. So we would be taking $550,000 from the CHESLA unrestricted operating account to combine with the CSLF transfer dollars to make the $1.3 million.
And Marty, Bud, I take it that leaves about, what, a $2 million left or $1.8 million or something like that?
Approximately, yeah.
And that's after putting aside $1 million in case we go out of business, it's board restricted?
Yeah, yes, there's still a separate line. I mean, that's including the board restricted amount, Carly, is that correct?
No, that does not include.
Okay.
The restricted. That's that $2.5 million is just in our operating account.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tim, hey. This is Bettina. I just have a question. Yes. So the cereals are being sold at a premium of $884,000 and the term bond is sold at a discount. I was just wondering why it shows the premium as a negative and the discount as a positive.
It's just a funky way in which the DBC system works on the student loan program.
Okay. I mean, if you look at the header, it says less discount.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I saw that. So it's a negative, negative. So it's a plus. I
correct.
It. It
just looks
kind of I think the purpose, Bettina, is to confuse people who get into the student loan industry. That's the entire thing. If you go back and look at all of us in the student loan business, there are a few of us, and I guess it's because we've been able to be unconfused for a while. But yeah, that's what it is.
Okay, I just want to make sure I was reading that correctly, and I am. Okay, good.
Okay. As I mentioned before, under the on the uses side, you'll see the deposit of $2.9 million roughly to the SCARF account. It's listed there at the STIF. Don't know whether the funds will go directly into the STIF or not, but for right now, that's a fine assumption. But what I want to call attention to, and perhaps we could have Judith or Sandy comment on it, is up in the sources, there's a reallocation of 300 and some odd thousand dollars that will be allocated from one of the other SCAR funds that is overfunded to be moved into the allocation associated with the 23 bonds. Sandy, I've set that up. Perhaps you could address that.
Sure. So under the 2019 resolution, it's a parity SCARF. So the requirement is that we fund it as a whole. And so that debt service payments are covered for all the bonds under the 2019 trust or the 2019 resolution. But when bonds mature, the SCARF requirement goes down. And so as it goes down, there's excess SCARF funds. In the past, the excess funds have been used either to redeem bonds and, as we're proposing here in this issue, be allocated to the SCARF for the new issues for the 2023 bonds. And that would help reduce the amount or the higher cost of debt needed for funding this SCAR for the 2023 bonds.
Any questions relative to that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. This is Carly. I did have one question. Do you know right now which issue that SCARF would be coming from, or would it be multiple issues?
I believe that it's coming from two separate issues. I don't have that, which issues those are coming from right now, Carly. Scott from B of A perhaps has that number. I just don't have it in front of me.
No, I don't have it in front of me right now either. Let me take a look.
Well, while Scott's Carly, looking at that, sorry, go ahead, Carly.
It's Judith Blank. We generally determine that at the time of pricing when we finalize the cash flows.
What we did, Carly, I can respond to is that we do an analysis to see what's in the SCARF versus what is remaining in MADS. And we look to see whether there are any overages or funds that could be allocated. So that was done as part of the analysis.
What is the SPIF currently returning?
I can tell you that.
I think it's in the fours, if I'm not mistaken. Right. It's pretty high right now.
It is 4.82%.
Wow.
Okay, so we're going to move on, unless there are any questions on the sources and uses. Any questions that I can respond to? So moving on, a couple of key assumptions associated with the cash flows. Student loans are driven by a couple of things. One is the speed at which the authority utilizes the funds. We use a presumed origination schedule that's provided by Josh and his crew. He has a lot of experience over the last X number of years of the percentage of loans that go out prior to the fall semester and then also prior to the winter semester. So we model in an anticipated draw schedule. One of the other, or probably the most important thing, aside from getting the loans into the trust, is what are the assumptions relative to defaults. As we've run in previous years, we've run two sets of cash flows. I believe all you have in your board packet are the credit cash flows, and they presume a 12% default rate on the portfolio. In our expected case, we run a 6% default rate. In addition thereto, we expect that there will be some monies that come back in through collection processes to this extent that the loan defaults, and we run a 30% recovery rate. Now, the 12% has come about as a multiple of what the expected defaults are, or the actual default. So perhaps, Josh, you could comment on what our current default rate history is with regard to the in-school portfolios.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So the historical gross default rate is a shade under 6%. And we experience a lot of recoveries from the collection company. We've had a historical net default rate of 2.27%. So again, historical gross of just under 6%. With a net default of 2.27%. So very low rate.
Thanks, Josh. Any questions relative to those assumption sets?
And Tim, just to clarify, the 12% is the stress case scenario, and 12 is a number that for whatever reason the rating agencies have historically latched onto. Is that correct?
No, I don't know that 12% is the presumption. We have used that assumption as more than two times what the default rates are associated with this particular portfolio. The assumptions that the rating agencies use are dependent upon the rating that you're trying to achieve and the type of portfolio that it is, whether it's a credit-based loan, non-credit-based, is it interest only, is it principal and interest, is it deferred, and also the term and the credit quality of the borrower. So that's a little bit different of an animal. We've been using 12% as something that we feel comfortable with as being at least double what the default rate is and significantly higher than what the recovery is after the default.
Marty Budd, we're out of money now, right, Josh? I think you said that, or at least it's all been committed.
Yeah, all the bond proceeds have been committed, and we're committing loans off of our balance sheet.
Uh-ah. from our own money.
Right.
And so as soon as these bonds are issued, you'll be able to start putting out loans from the proceeds.
Yes.
You know, I had a question that goes back on that subject. On page 64, you list the loan portfolio and you list the series they came from. But the loans that we've made from the balance sheet and will make from the balance sheet, I don't see, it doesn't say that. It says bond series on page 64. It doesn't say on the balance sheet as the source of where those loans came from.
So
I think that table, Marty, reflects the loans that are held in the various series as opposed to loans that are on the balance sheet. So I don't know that they would be incorporated in that particular table.
Right. And I believe these numbers are as of December. We didn't start dispersing off of our balance sheet until after December.
But we put in loans for which we're going to be reimbursed $2 million according to the sources and uses. So there must be some loans that were originated from the Marty? Balance sheet in the portfolio.
Marty Vinot, loans we're going to reimburse the authority for with the proceeds of these bonds will not transfer to the portfolio, to the indenture, until we close and reimburse the authority. There are, in the past, under the 2019 resolution, there are some dated on the CESLA balance sheet that were transferred in, and they're tracked by series, and they're tracked in a separate loan equity fund for that series.
I see. So in other words, the list on page 64 includes those loans, but it's under a series.
Right. So
correct.
No, going off of what Judith mentioned, I believe with the 2019 deal, we contributed $7 million of refi loans off of our balance sheet. A portion of them were contributed to the 19A taxable side of the deal and a portion to the 19B tax exempt side of the deal. So they would be reflected under 2019A or 2019B there.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay, Tim, we can go back. Ahead, Tim.
Any other questions there? If not, I'll move on. Kara, I'm going to throw a little wrench and ask you to move to page 195 in the board packet. So just to go back towards the originations that we had discussed, on the left-hand side of the page is the origination schedule that Josh has provided us. The $1,397,687 plus a couple of those additional originations, those effectively will be the $2 million that will be reimbursed to the authority when those loans move into the trust. The remaining loans are originated between August of 23 through August of 24 in this cash flow.
Marty Budd again, why did you spread out that $2 million in May, June, and July when we're going to put them in at closing effect?
Oh, so Marty, I think it's twofold. So the 1.4 is basically what's gone out the door, but then the remainder of those loans are committed with second disbursements. It's more reflective of when those other disbursements would go out.
Thank you.
Okay, so from here, I'm going to move over to the reserve fund report, which I believe is page 192. I think this is one thing that everybody is very, very interested in, particularly since these bonds are rated off of the SCARF. What this shows is that on the right-hand side of the page is MADS. That's the requirement under the reserve requirement. And if there were any red numbers on this page, that would indicate that we had an issue with regard to having to tap the SCARF for the payment of debt service. The SCARF requirement stays up at the requirement level. And then the only movement in and out of the SCARF are movements out of the SCARF as revenue surpluses. And those occur when certain bonds are redeemed in the 23 issue, and then the MADS requirement drops as a function of fewer bonds outstanding. Down at the very bottom of the page, you'll see it, some red numbers, the 1,702,000 on 11/15 of 36, I believe that is. That is the date on which these bonds are anticipated to be paid off under this cash flow set of assumptions. And what that is a movement of all the money that's in the SCARF that's moving out of that fund that would then be used to redeem bonds on the last date.
Tim, Marty Budd again.
Yes, sir.
The 4.8% we're earning in the SCARF, that stays in the SCARF, right? So it's the SCARF gets in excess of the requirement, not only from the redemption of bonds, but from interest. Isn't that true?
That's true. Yep. Okay, from here, if there are no other questions, I'm going to go to page 193. And this just gives you an indication of how the bonds would be paid down. This is a bond component redemption report. On the left side of the screen are maturities. Those equate to the serial maturities that are locked out, non-callable bonds out to 11/15/33. And then with excess revenues that are being generated off of the loan receipts, we're doing annual redemptions in this cash flow. So you'll see that bonds are maturing on the left, and then you're redeeming from those that super sinker bond starting relatively soon. This cash flow projects that we would have redemptions beginning in 26. The next report that I'd go to is the cash flow report, which are pages 190 and 191. This outlines the revenues on the left side of the page, the debt service, third column from the right, your total expenses, which account for admin fees and trustee fees and any other fees associated with keeping the bonds outstanding. Other than the servicing, servicing fees are incorporated in the gross revenues. Your net revenues, and then on the very far right-hand portion of the page is the revenue fund balance. If you scroll, I guess we need to go to 189, the prior page. Nope, I'm sorry, 190 is good. You can see that there are no draws on the reserve fund. That would be the middle column immediately to the right of the net revenues. If there were any red in there, that would be indicative of a draw. We already showed you the reserve fund that where there were no draws. And then you can see that negative 1,702,000. That's the final draw that's taken out of the reserve fund when there are no bonds outstanding. If you go to the next page, 191, you'll see that in this particular cash flow under these assumptions, the residual of the portfolio after paying expenses is $231,000. Just as a point of reference, in the expected case, that residual is about $1.7 million.
Tim, is there an annual coverage ratio for the?
No, there's no requirement for coverage ratio. We do have a release ratio there where we can push cash out. And again, what we're showing you here, Bettina, is the issue as a standalone issue, but this is running in a bigger trust.
Right.
And we have cash flows of the entire trust as well. And it's quite a different picture there, which we can provide to you in the treasurer's office so you can see the trust as the whole. But when we run these cash flows, we make sure that each individual series stands up on its own and does not have a draw on the SCARF, as opposed to having to rely on one of the other issues to provide monies to pay debt service, so there wouldn't be a draw.
So independently strong and strong as a whole with the
correct
with the rest of them too. Okay,
that's the plan,
right.
And obviously based on a set of assumptions. The final thing that I'd like to show is on page 188, and this is the. Right now is a projection of how the bonds could be sold. This might be a little bit stale, a few days old. In today's market, things are moving very rapidly and they can change. I think we've probably got an improvement from where these were run, but I thought it might be appropriate to have B of A comment on the structure and perhaps on the pricing as modeled in the cash flows.
Sure, I can start that again. This is Joe Santor from Bank of America. I also have Scott Robertson from our team. And so I'll give it kind of a broad overview and then turn over to Scott for some more details here. You know, so at your last full board meeting, which is about 2 weeks ago from today, we were actually at the EFC conference, and I'm sorry I couldn't join your full board meeting for the update, but we were actually giving an update at the exact same time to that at the student loan conference. So, you know, certainly glad that March has passed us, and so the broader markets looked, you know, it was a little bit of March madness, as you had early on in March 9th and 10th, a couple of very large banks. Actually, the second and third largest U.S. bank failures in history occurred. And certainly the markets were turbulent for the couple of weeks after that. So it was very good that we weren't planning on being in the market then. But, you know, similar in some ways, but obviously less severe to the financial crisis. The muni market has remained strong and effectively open while some other corporate markets and taxable markets shut down for a week or so. But, you know, there's definitely a lot more calm in the market at this point. And, you know, we didn't have any weekend news from the Fed, which is always good. And, you know, perhaps the worst has passed. You know, what the bank issues have done, though, has effectively added some a couple of levels of stress that weren't there before. And probably mitigates the amount that the Fed's going to have to move. So instead of you know, terminal rates being perhaps people were at one point predicting closer to 6% where the Fed was going to go. Now, you know, last week the Fed just moved 25. Earlier, a month ago, the consensus was they would move 50, but they just moved 25 last week. And the consensus right now is they'll just move, well, it's kind of half and half between 25 and zero at the next meeting, and then that's it, and then stay there for a certain period of time. Markets believe the Fed will actually reduce rates later on this year. The Fed is kind of holding firm that they're not going to. They're going to keep them steady for a while. You know, but what overall, what this has done in the municipal market has brought the overall yield curve down. And I think Scott can have give some specifics on that. But and we initially, certainly credit stresses had gone up. But as we'll look at some numbers, it's actually not a significant change here on the credit stress side, at least on the municipal market overall. So that's, you know, I think in a way a positive here for Tesla. And, you know, we'll have to see how the other, you know, think about the overall competitive landscape and things like that. There are certainly some entities in the student loan space that think of like a Sallie Mae Bank, they were a bank, and they were providing very high, taking in deposits, providing a very high, relatively high level of return for those deposits and making student loans. And that was primarily where their business has been lately. Well, that kind of model is certainly under a little bit more scrutiny now. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as those entities maybe shift away from relying on deposit funding, which a lot of it is going away, and people are investing in treasuries and money market funds to get those high rates that we have in the STIP. And, other funds, you know, they may have to come back to the asset-backed market or other capital markets, which provide a higher, have higher cost, and therefore they'll probably have to raise their loan rates. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that overall competitive landscape works here. But, you know, again, overall, we're at a better point than we were a few weeks ago, and we expect this calmness to you know, hopefully continue here. We are looking to post a POS in just a couple of weeks and price later on this month. So with that, I'll turn it over to Scott Robertson and say a few things about where we are in the markets and rates.
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, I think what's important to keep in mind here when we develop this particular scale for your program, it was earlier in March, March in we went through a lot of stress, as Joe noted, through the bank crises. Where we are now compared to where we were back in March, around March 3rd, March 4th, we're about 50 to 60 basis points tighter on the front end, and about 35 to 40 basis tighter on the long end. The curve is still inverted, meaning that the cost of money in year one is more than the cost of money in year six at this point. But all in all, the level of the inversion has decreased here at the beginning of April compared to the beginning of March. With that said, credit spreads had also blown out late last month, given the banking crisis that was going on. We have started to see that contract. And we believe that right now, it's probably just a little bit higher than it was when we originally produced these numbers back in early March. But all that said, we believe at this point in time that this curve that you see in terms of what the yields are on these bonds is conservative. And we believe that the transaction should do very well in the market, and we should be inside of these levels if things don't change between now and pricing. That's always the big if. With that said, given the trend right now in the market, we feel confident that this is, or comfortable that this is a conservative scale. And I'll take any questions if you have any.
Marty, Bud, what's your exact timing? You said you were going to price towards the end of the month, but when are we going to send out the preliminary? What's the timing on all of this?
Yes, Mr. Bud, we have the current calendar has us posting the POS the week of April 17th and pricing the following week.
Thank you.
So, Marty, that could potentially change. We'll be working with Hilltop's desk and with B of A's desk to decide whether or not we should continue on that schedule or not. Obviously, we're not in the business of projecting interest rates or looking at a crystal ball. We want to get into the market when we think we have a good opportunity. But given some of Joe's comments relative to interest rates, holding flat, maybe not an increase. There's a Fed meeting on May 2nd. So initially we structured this of trying to get out in front of the Fed. But we'll see as we get closer whether or not that's still in the cards for us, and that we believe that to be the best way to go. One other thing that I would mention is that B of A is the senior manager on this. We will have a co with Blaylock. We've worked with them in the past. Just wanted to keep that as a thought. Finally, once we do price these bonds, we always go back in and rerun the cash flows. There are a few levers that can be moved, such as loan rates or potentially equity contribution, depending upon the execution levels for the debt. So those are all considered. We run the cash flows both on the expected and the credit stress as well before we finalize those two items. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Marty, Bud, again.
Tim? Go ahead, Marty.
When will the board or Jeanette know what those updated cash flows show as far as loan rate and equity at the end? And will Jeanette just send an email to all the board? How will that work?
Generally, Marty, it'll take a couple of days. We'll price the bonds. We try to get the bonds sold before noon or 1 o'clock Eastern on the pricing date. We'll probably be signing the BPA that afternoon or the next morning. Once we've actually know what the price on the bonds are, then B of A and Hilltop will work together. I'll just be reviewing the cash flows that B of A produces. And we'll look at what levers can be moved to improve the cash flows or improve the loan rate or reduce that equity contribution. That usually takes anywhere from 1 to 2, maybe 3 days. At that point, Jeanette would be able to make a decision on which lever she wants to move or leave everything as is. And then I presume that she would contact the board.
Right. That in the past, we then sent out an update to the board.
Thank you.
This is Julie. I have a question too. I know, Joe, you spoke about the competition with the Sallie Mae loans. Do we have any sense of what some of our major competitors in the state loans might actually be going out with? And I'm thinking of MIFA, RISLA, New Jersey Class, which are really our, you know, the other loan programs that we see much more competition and, you know, some fairly aggressive loan rates as well. Do we know what they're up to these days and how that might influence what rates we will come out with?
Julie, this is Tim for the record. We refer to them as the usual suspects. Yeah. And, yeah. The usual suspects come during the same period. I believe RISLA is looking to come somewhere in the second week or third week in May. New Jersey is scheduled to price somewhere around the last week in April. I'm not 100% sure about MIFA, but I think they're in the second or third week of May. RISLA probably the same thing. I think there's small issues by VSAC and FAME as well. And right. Then Kentucky will be in the market this spring, early summer. I don't know that we have an indication of what kind of loan rates they're anticipating at this point, but they're going to be doing similar things. Obviously, MIFA has somewhat of a different market because they generally do taxable bonds. RISLA does some taxables as well, and Kentucky does the same. New Jersey will be issuing on their standard type of product with P&I interest only in the deferred loans. Right. They also have a small portion of refi and some consolidation loans. I can tell you that they're going to be in about the same size that they have been in the past. But I can't really tell you what kind of interest rate they're looking at. They're dealing with the same marketplace that you are. With regard to tax exempts, and they're all looking to be able to beat that plus rate by as much as they possibly can. But I know from being involved in a few of those transactions that everybody is a little bit shell-shocked given how low rates have been in the past and where interest rates have to be this year to deal with the change in the interest rate environment. The good news is that the spread, the ratio between MMD and the U.S. Treasury is still very positive. It's in your favor for issuing tax-exempt bonds, so there should be some pretty good daylight between the rate that you set on your CHESL loan and the plus loan, same with the other institutions. The big difference is just that that first number, which has been a 5 or even a 4 in CHESL's right. instance for a number of years, that's going to move. That's probably going to be above a 5 and into the 6s.
Correct. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Tim, this is Peter. Several minutes ago, we were talking about the default rate, and I think Josh put a number out there of 6% to where we are. Could you just comment for a minute? I mean, from your perspective in the student loan industry, how, I'm assuming 6% is quite good, but could you just comment on that for a minute for me?
Well, I think the real important number that Josh came back with, which was after collections, you're looking at the 2s.
Right.
I think for a long time it was just it was below 2. I think it was the 1.7s, 1.8s, and I think that's pretty strong. You have different situations depending upon the issuer and the credit the credit hurdles that people have to go through to get the loan rate to get the loan. Some people offer loans strictly based on credit. So someone with a higher credit rating is going to get a better quality loan. CHESL doesn't do that. They have one loan for everybody. But I think that a 2% net default rate on your portfolio is very competitive within the industry.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Are there any questions? Any other questions? Comments? Tim or Joe, is there anything else you'd like to share with the board at this point? Questions? Jeanette, is there anything further you'd like to add to this?
No, I think we covered everything, and just wanted to mention, you know, as I said, it's been a group effort. We had our regular weekly calls with bond counsel, financial advisor, underwriter, and me and Josh. So, so it's been a great process, the usual process, but it's been going well. So,
I'll move the authorizing resolution.
Well, I was going to say, if there's no further comments, we can move to that item on the agenda. We've got a motion to accept the authorizing resolution for the 2023 series bonds as presented. Would someone like to make a second that motion?
I'm Bettina Brown Eyes, I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Are there further questions or comments?
You do mention in the authorizing resolution, I think, refi loans. I'm going to go look at my authorizing resolution. In paragraph two, it says that such as a federal tax exempt or on a federally taxable basis. In paragraph two, you see, authorize an aggregate principal amount not to exceed $29,965, and that such issuance shall be on a federally tax-exempt basis. Do we want to take out or on a federally taxable basis?
This is Sandy. We could take it out, or we generally just always leave in, you know, the flexibility of tax-exempt or taxable as appropriate. I mean, it's probably at this point, we're sure that it's not going to be taxable. So
that's what we've been talking about all this time, and run assumptions and a whole bunch of other things. So I would prefer to move that we take that out, and I'll amend my resolution with those words out.
Okay. Bettina, are you comfortable seconding that motion with the amendment or with the those words taken out?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Fine.
So it's been moved and seconded. Are there other comments on the resolution, on any of the cash flow assumptions, the modeling that has been done, anything, the marketplace that Josh has looked at? All right, hearing none, I'll call for vote. All those in favor of accepting the proposed authorizing resolution with the minor corrections stated by Marty, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. And thank you to Jeanette and Tim and Joe and the entire working group for putting this together. And Sandy, thank you all. Is there any other business anyone would like to bring forward? Anything for the good of the cause? Anyone? Well, hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Anyone?
Second.
Well, thank you. It's been made and seconded that we adjourn. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.